Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're betting the NFL playoffs, you need to be listening to Cash the Ticket. We're breaking down every single game, totals and sides, all the way to the big game. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Danny and Dusty.
Meringue-a-tang is going to be a thing.
You're not coining anything new.
With Danny Meringue and Dusty, the Fan Man Hera.
All throws and monkey sounds in there and call it good.
The old Danny Meringue pie.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080.
Yeah, this is going to be awesome.
The Fan.
Hey, what's up, sports fans? Welcome once again into a Schulte and Will edition of Danny and Dusty here on Sports Radio 1080. The Fan, Danny and Rusty, still out for the holidays. Dusty on the road with Oregon. They're preparing to take on Ohio State in the Rose Bowl tomorrow. Super stoked for that. We're going to get into a lot of that talk today. Happy New Year to everybody out there. Would love to talk about your plans tonight. Lots going on around the city, of course. Lots going on in the world of sports. You got college football playoff quarterfinals getting going tonight. So I'm sure that there's going to be sports fans kind of either divided between the two, like watching the game while they're partying, or the other section of sports fans just going to be staying home and watching this game. Will, happy New Year. What are you going to be doing tonight, man? You going to be watching this Penn State matchup with Boise State tonight out like at a bar, or are you going to be waiting at home to do that and then go out to a bar? Are you just staying home the whole night? What you doing?
I don't know. I kind of figure things out as I go. I will definitely be at home for the majority of this game. And then we'll see. If it's a close game and it's something like, hey, I need to pay attention to, maybe we'll do the pregame over at the house. And if it's something where it's like, eh, you know what, Penn State's up big or Boise State's up big, I don't need to watch all of this.
Yeah.
I've seen what I need to be seeing, right? I might just head out and kind of keep an eye on it if I'm out at a bar or something. I've never done a Portland New Year's.
Okay.
I've always stayed on my side of the river. I don't know that today is going to change that. I'm not saying that, saying like I'm going to be down in Portland, like trying to find a ball drop spot.
A lot of stuff to do in the Couve, though.
Yeah, I don't know. I like kind of being on my side of the river. The Uber drive back is a lot cheaper.
That is fair, especially tonight. It's going to be like peak times, I'm assuming, added to all of those balances. So those extra fees are going to be tacked on quite a bit. Although, if you are in downtown Portland, this is usually something that the city does on New Year's. You get free MAX rides, so you can get on the MAX train in the downtown area, which, thank goodness they do that. That is one of the cooler things that the city of Portland does every year, just to allow everybody to get to their destinations to and from them safely. Pretty cool.
I did do that in high school, I'm not going to lie. In high school, we went down and we got to do the zoo lights, right? You get your you get your first girlfriend. You got to go do zoo lights, you and your buddies. So you got like two buddies and their girlfriends are all friends. Everyone's all
your
friends.
Your double dates, your group of friends, whatever.
It's a whole thing. I remember that was the first time I think I had a stranger offer me alcohol. It was great.
That is kind of
I said no. It was, I was on the MAX. We had just gotten done getting, you know, doing the zoo lights thing, whatever, trying to figure out what we're going to do
next. Bag?
No. So,
hey,
buddy,
here you go, kid.
It might be the most seedy individual of all time. Like, he looked like Eric Andre. Eric Andre, like, really didn't care about how people thought about him.
Just disheveled.
Oh, it, like, there were holes in the pants. There were holes in the shirt. He had a teddy bear. And I was like trying to be funny, you know, you got it's like the first girlfriend you really have. You're like, I'm going to say something to this guy. And I looked over and it's like, sweet bear, dude. And I remember he reached inside of the bear, pulled out two Jell-O shots and was like, you want some, bud? And I was like, no, I don't. I don't want any part of that. I was smart enough at 18 there to go, no. That's a bad idea. No, thank you.
Jell-O shots from a stuffed animal?
From a stranger on a stuffed animal.
Okay.
That's right.
That is one of the wackier things. Like, there have been some wacky things on the MAX train. That is one of the wackier things I think I've ever heard. I mean, from stabbings to people's hair being cut to, like, I've seen people clip in their toenails, like, just out in the open on the MAX. Like,
dude,
this also is weird.
Foul.
That is disgusting.
Foul. That might be a top five gross thing that you can do in public.
Exactly. There is a list, a hierarchy of the grossest things that you can do in public, and cutting your nails is definitely on there.
Yeah, and it gets grosser if you're cutting your toenails. Like, if you're cutting your fingernails, you're a gross, sick animal.
Yeah, you are.
But if you're cutting your toenails, you want to see the world burn. And I'll tell you what, like, I've seen it.
I have too.
And as far as, like, downtown Portland goes, I think I might take some of the, like, things that people get upset about, like, where people are, like, washing themselves in the drinking fountain. Depending on the body part, I might take the people washing themselves in the drinking fountain.
Well, at least you're
over the person who's clipping their toenails,
making yourself smell okay at that point.
Well, I don't need to see you, you know, messing with your toe jam or whatever, clipping your toenails. Well, it's gross.
People's feet don't usually smell great, and then when you're walking around with them out like that, and then you decide to touch them a bunch. Like on this surface that everybody else is sitting on. Ugh, like,
well, it's never a clean person. It's always the grossest person that's on the train.
I know? Rop is usually like the super like anti-germ guy, but I feel like I'm turning into Rop as I describe this kind of situation.
No.
Because I see a MAX train, and now I don't think I'm going to be able to think about anything else but all the bacteria on that thing. Gross. So be careful. Maybe wear some gloves tonight, people that are riding those.
Well, most of the time when Rop goes on his anti-germ rant, I'm just like, all right, dude, there's a little bit of an eye roll from me.
Yeah, not this.
This isn't one. If Rob goes on the campaign of no more, you know, clipping your toenails in public, I couldn't be more on board. I had a gym that I went to back in college, so not here in this area, not an affiliated gym. It was like a local Ellensburg only gym. All the time. All the freaking time you would find like toenail clippings or like fingernail clippings. I stopped. I was like, this is gross. I will not. I'd rather get fat, not lift here.
Yeah, I wouldn't go there.
Like, it's disgusting. I don't need to see that. Like, take care of yourself. It's also a shared space. Don't be a jerk in a shared space. It's not that hard.
I feel like that is where people are the most jerks, though, is in a shared space. They don't have anybody at home by themselves to be jerks to, so they take it out on everybody else around them, and where can they do that? The gym.
Well, and this is coming from a guy who doesn't care, like, played football for a long time, like, going into the locker room.
Some gross smells.
People got a shower.
Yeah.
People got a shower, man. That stuff doesn't bother me.
It's pretty gross after practice.
Well, I'm just saying from a standpoint of like, I get, there are a lot of people who don't play in an organized sport that when they go to the gym, what's their biggest complaint? There's naked people walking around in the locker room.
Like,
they don't like that. I don't care about that. That's not something that bothers me. In fact, I'm probably one of those people myself. If I got a shower, I'm showering. And I'm not going to show up to work or to another place smelling gross because I didn't want to shower in a gym locker room. Like, that's not going to happen. I don't care. I will go in and I will shower, and I'd rather be clean than deal with not being clean. If I have to see fingernail clippings or toenail clippings, I might fight you.
I think I am in the camp with you on that one. Hey, chime in on the Vancouver Ford text line, 503-864-6FAN. What is the grossest thing that a person could do in public? I think Will and I are at least putting clipping your toenails at 2 or 1 on that list for sure. But another question that's been burning in my head, Will, obviously wondering what your New Year's plans are for tonight, wondering what y'all's are doing for this evening as well. Hit us up on the YouTube or the Vancouver Ford text line to chime in as well on that. But party etiquette, that's been something that's kind of been on my mind a little bit, Will, and here's why. So kind of wondering what is the optimum time to show up for a party, right? Like, is it, you know, like whenever you get the invite or somebody says, hey, come on over, like it's 7, you wonder when the opportune time is. When is appropriate for you as a guest to show up at said house for the event? And if it starts at 7... I think like 15, 20 minutes, 30 minutes is probably after that event starts is when you start seeing the first group of people showing up. Then you'll kind of get the second wave of people by about an hour, maybe an hour and 15 minutes in. Mostly everybody's there except for like the super stragglers, which there's always a buddy or a gal in a group of friends that is that. And I think I might be that for my group of friends.
Oh, I'm always last.
Yeah, for
sure. I want to be last. I will not show up on time on purpose. The only stuff I'm on time for is work. Yeah. Otherwise, I will not show up on time. I will be the last person that shows up. I'm a big believer. Like if they say 7, I'm showing up at 8.
I'm for that. I like that because 7, I'm the guy that likes to give a starting time to a party. I don't really give an ending time. Whenever we throw events or we throw parties, it's just like, hey, till whenever people go home. But when I think of like the etiquette as far as showing up goes, I never thought that it was okay to show up at the start.
Like, no, you can't.
So that's weird. I send the invite out at a 7 p.m. invite, somebody shouldn't be rolling up at my door at 7 p.m. as the party starts,
right? No, that's poor form. Or that's a person, unless it's like, hey, I have to leave it. You know, we're doing this thing at 7. I got to be at this other thing at 10. Then okay. Like, I can get behind that. But then there also has to be proper communication beforehand. Like, hey, this is what's going on.
I'm
going
to be showing up right as the start, you know, if that's okay.
Right. But this is also why I don't commit to anything at all, like ever, because I don't want to commit to something and then be like, oh, I got to go do this on the back end. There's a lot of no preparation in the things that I do. And I'm sure that shows the age that I am, but there's a lot of like, all right, it's 7:30. Let's figure out something to do. Or, okay, it's New Year's Eve. We should do something on New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
That text is getting sent out probably when this show ends. Like, that's kind of how I operate behind the scenes. There's not a whole lot of planning. I'm trying to as I get older. Much like my pants buying.
Yeah.
I'm trying to be better about it.
Yeah, we've talked a little bit about that on the show. By the way, Brandon says, my family is always the first to arrive and the last to leave. So yeah, just wondering what other people have in mind as far as party etiquette goes. I had somebody show up at a gathering that I had about 3 weeks ago on the dot.
Are you an Irish goodbyer?
At 8:00. What is an Irish goodbye?
Just leave. That's my new favorite thing.
Yeah, I've seen people doing that. I've heard a lot from, like, I think Isaac and Suk are big Irish goodbyes.
They might be big not show uppers.
Well, that's true too. Yeah, but when they leave anything, they just kind of leave. They don't really say goodbye. But I'm not really like that. I like to kind of finish it up with everybody, say, hey, see you next time, have a couple more stupid comments, you know, jokes amongst each other.
Then
say goodbye before we go about our days.
It's my new thing. Like, I started doing it within the last 6 months. I did it. Literally, it was like hanging out with a couple buddies, just kind of looked around, was like, I'm going to go to the bathroom, go back into the house, and just kept going. Didn't even stop, didn't even turn. Sent him a text in the morning, hey, man, that was awesome, great hang. I think it might be my new move. Like, I think I'm going to, like, as I get older, I'm not going to be the show up early guy, because that's what Rufio is saying here on the text line. It's like, hey, we're going to start getting earlier as you get older, because, like, it kind of seems like that's what you're supposed to do. I think that might be my new move, is that I just leave. No one will even know. And then I'll leave them wanting more. It'll be smart. I'll make a couple jokes, have a couple laughs, have a couple conversations, and then I'll leave. And then everyone will be like, man,
where'd Will go?
Where'd Ortner? Like, why is Ortner gone?
Yeah, so I get that. I get that. That's a fine way of doing a goodbye, but I don't understand why people would show up. You say that it is not proper form. I don't understand why people would show up at the very start of my party, because I was still getting out of the shower, and it was an 8:00 start, not a 7:00 start, but getting out of the shower at like 7:59, getting dressed, my wife's still putting makeup on, and then literally the doorbell rings. And it's 8:00 on the dot, and I think somebody was waiting outside like until it turned 8:00 so they could come in. I don't think I'd ever had that happen before to me, and my wife and I were pretty caught off guard. We were like, all right, we got 10 minutes, we got 15 minutes, but I am 35, and that is the first time I've had somebody show up at the very start
of the
party. I think right around my age, maybe a couple years
older. Maybe that's an age thing. Like, maybe like as you're getting older, you're going to start showing up more and more on time.
No, I'm not going to show up right at the start of a party.
Yeah, because that's going to be a judge thing. Or like if, hey, we're all meeting out here at 6. Nah, I ain't showing up until 6.
Yeah, I'm showing up 6:15, 6:30. Yeah, come on. Well, plus,
you got to be fashionably late. That's what society expects.
So it's not 10 minutes early means you're late anymore?
No, it
that
does.
Used to be a it thing does. From no, my dad.
It does. It does in like a workplace. Like, I'm not showing up 30 minutes late here to 1080 The Fan. I will show up late if I'm hanging out with my buddies, or I'm like invited to Sunday dinner with my parents. I'm not showing up on time, and don't expect me to. If I am at a work thing, that is completely different. You need to show up 10 to 15 minutes beforehand.
And see, now I'm hearing from people, fan text line, it's kind of your fault. Vancouver Ford text line not agreeing with me. Then the YouTube chat, Lazing says, if the party starts at 8 p.m., you better expect people to show up at 8 p.m. That's when you set the time. If you don't want them to show up at that time, then make the start time later. I mean, it's more of a guide, right? Like, I guess that it's... How do you say you can show up now, but maybe wait 10 minutes? I don't want to put 8:10 to start the party on the invite. That's kind of stupid.
You start doing it like a first pitch thing. Like, hey, you can show up at 6:45. The door is open at 6:43.
And see, the fan text line again says tee times for golf. A good party planner sets a time and also says tee times for golf. You better be in time. But this isn't.
I take that back. I will show up on time for golf.
If it's a tee time, that makes sense because you got like tee times every 19 minutes or 17 minutes or whatever that course is selling them at. That's not a party where everybody's just kind of expected to show up.
Yep. So here's where I think I'm coming around. The Vancouver Ford text line is getting me to come around a little bit on this. If you say it starts at 8 and you're the host, I think as the host, you have to be ready.
Okay.
I think I might be coming around to this.
All right.
As the host, 8 o'clock, you're ready. However, as a party guest, I think it's your obligation to not show up until at least 15 minutes to 30 minutes after.
But who's in the wrong then if...
I think it's a moral gray area.
So if I'm not ready, I'm in the wrong. But also if that person doesn't show up at 7:30 or 8:30, they show up at on the dot at 8 or 7, they're in the wrong?
My eyes, yes.
Okay.
Yes. You're both wrong.
Damn it.
I think I'm with the Vancouver Ford text line on this, because if you are hosting and you make the time slot, you set it, you probably do need to be ready, or like mostly ready, right? Like if you're running to go grab drinks, or hey, you know, we're finishing up making the charcuterie board or whatever, like you can still do that while people show up for the people who show up on the dot. However, I think that if you're like a show up on the dot person, I think that there's a little bit of a judgment for me if you're not the host.
For sure.
I think the best people are the ones who show up late, but like 15 to 30 minutes late, fashionably late.
Yeah.
But then I also expect you to be there most of the time. Like, I almost expect the on-the-dot people to be the first ones turning in.
Okay.
Like, they're on the dot because they know I'm out of here at like 8 or 9. If it's a 7 o'clock, I'm out of here at 9. I'm out at 10.
Okay.
Where like if you show up 15 to 30 minutes before, I expect you to shut that place down.
I love this. Had an event that started at 1 p.m. My uncle showed up at 11:45, hadn't even showered yet. That's pretty funny to hear. And that's a little egregious. Okay, we could talk so much about this. We'll kind of sprinkle in some responses from the text line coming up through the rest of this show. It seems to be that people are divided. So, I don't know, maybe you have to post this as like a poll question or something up on 1080 The Fan's X account. But, we could be talking about etiquette for parties all day. It is New Year's Eve, so it's definitely a day for party time. But we got to get to some sports. So let's get to a deep dive into Oregon's matchup with Ohio State in the Rose Bowl. We'll also check in with Dusty Hera live down in Pasadena, giving us a report on said Rose Bowl. We're also going to ask whether or not LeBron James is delusional. And we're going to take a look back at the year that was in sports. But first, let's check in on the Portland Trail Blazers and how they looked against the 76ers after Chauncey Billups returned to the sidelines. Schulte and Will sitting in for Danny and Dusty today on Sports Radio 1080 The Fan.
This is Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and Portland's sports leader, 1080 The Fan.
Well, the Portland Trail Blazers took another loss. Thank goodness, at least if we are still trying to capture the flag here in Portland. Not quite sure what Joe Cronin and Chauncey Billups are doing, but the Blazers taking the loss at home last night to the Philadelphia 76ers, 125-103, the final. Coming in, the Blazers were on a little bit of a two-game winning streak, Will. I believe those were both under assistant Nate Bjorkson, who was coaching in place of Chauncey Billups, who had been away from the team. I believe it was the death of his grandmother. Never fun to have to deal with that or leave your job to go, say goodbye to one of your most loved family members. Like, that's awful. But in the two-game absence that Chauncey missed, Bjorkstrand coached the Blazers to a couple of decent wins, especially on Saturday, a shorthanded team. But seeing Chauncey coming back for the Blazers kind of brought back a little bit of an old familiar feel, and that was seeing really, really bad shooting from the Blazers, seeing really bad defense, and giving up a lot of turnovers in that 125-103 loss. Portland shooting 8 of 36 from three-point range, and the refs actually were blowing their whistle a lot, too. It was 53 fouls combined for both teams. Just love when referees insert themselves into games like that. It is super, super annoying, but along with that, turned the ball over 24 times, Portland did, and that gave the Philadelphia 76ers 36 points off of turnovers, which, I don't know, you look at the stats for guys, the shooting was bad, the turnovers were bad, I guess just the three-point shooting was bad, but the turnovers were bad. A couple of decent performances, from guys like Denny Avdia. He actually looks like he's competent in the starting lineup, but as soon as I say that, then I see, oh no, he actually had 10 turnovers last night. Donovan Klingon, frustrated that he only played, 9-10 minutes. He had a couple of turnovers in that as well. And it's even more frustrating by the end of the game. You're essentially just, watching Duop Reith in cleanup minutes. There's really nothing going on in Portland of note right now. Shaedon Sharpe didn't have a great day. It was 5 of 14 from the field for him. 1 of 8 from three-point land after coming off of three very good shooting performances. And in five games actually leading up to this, he was averaging 23 points. So we've seen kind of these flashes from this team, but just kind of still leaves me wondering what the hell they're doing, wondering where they're going. They seem to be sitting on the fence, that they aren't really willing, at least at this point, to make any waves, like with a trade or a staff change. We know why they're not going to fire Chauncey at this point. Jody Allen will not waste that money. Paul Allen would be rolling around in his grave right now. But you have so many questions on this roster, like Chris Murray. He hasn't really shown up much this season outside of a couple of games. Scoot Henderson has shown some development as of late, but then, once again, back to a 2 of 7 shooting night last night, and, he turned the ball over three times as well. And that's been one of his biggest negatives, has been just, he cannot consistently get down the court without turning the ball over. He seems to have good court vision, but he's just too out of control. And just trying to watch this team this year, it kind of seems like my boycott has almost intentionally slipped into this season from last year because I was mad at them for trading Dame. I kind of still feel like I'm maybe boycotting them a little bit just because they're such a joke of a franchise. Well, I'm not sure where this team can go from here. They're not doing anything. They're sitting on their hands and not going any direction, not trading Ant. Not trading Jeremy Grant, not trading Robert Williams. Now there's still 5 weeks or so before the deadline as we sit in the final day of 2024, so they've got some time, but big move was made over the weekend. The Lakers swapping Finney Smith for D'Angelo Russell and a few picks with the Brooklyn Nets. It's funny that Russell went from one team that he'd already been on back to another team that he had already been on. It's just the craziness of the NBA, and I really hate how coaches and GMs fall so susceptibly to shiny new thing syndrome. It's just ridiculous. But you see moves being made. You see other conversations being had. And Will, it just feels like Portland is just stagnant. And they don't mind being stagnant.
Well, you just want to see growth from the young players. It wasn't a good game. The last two games, you saw growth from Shaedon. You saw growth from Scoot. Scoot hit a game-winning shot for you.
Yes,
right?
He did.
You want to see moments of growth. But again, this is why a lot of people, Danny talked about it, Sprague talked about it. Is Portland ready for the true tank? And this is what tanking is. You have to suck. You have to lose a lot of games. When you play a team like the Philadelphia 76ers, who are hotter than hot right now, I think they're 11-3 in their last, 14?
And they've won 12 six straight. And 3. Yeah.
They've been on fire right now. And that's because they're finally starting to get healthy, minus their big rookie TikTok guy, Jared McCann. So to me, this is what you're supposed to do. I want to lose. I want to lose these games. I don't want to win games that I'm not supposed to win. I want to put myself in the best position. And then you have to trust that Cronin and the rest of the crew, they're going to make the right trades or the right moves to get the most opportunity for draft picks in the future or capital in the future. And I don't feel like they've done a bad job of that. The problem is you've made a move for two younger guys who have had injury issues, who haven't been able to play as much as you would like. And right now, some of the advanced metrics on Scoot, they don't look amazing. Can he change it? Maybe. Yeah. You never know. Look at De'Aaron Fox when he first started. His advanced metrics aren't great. Look at Darius Garland. When he first started, there's some advanced metrics for him that weren't great either.
It's fair.
Scoot's what, 19, 20? Like, there's still room for him to grow. Like, literally, and as a ball player, too. Like, he could literally grow another inch. That is a thing. It's what I did when I was that age. So, I don't know, man. I look at this game and I go, good. That's what it was supposed to look like. We're supposed to lose. You had two games where everyone kind of looked like they were taking two big steps forward. Well, here's that step back.
I get that. I understand what you're saying, and you want to lose, but I guess that's not really my issue. Like, I'm glad that they lost this game against Philly. I guess my issue was, why are they winning these games or trying to compete? That's probably because Nate Bjorkson is probably trying to coach, you know, for a job, maybe as a head coach at some point, or to be the interim if the Blazers somehow decided to move on from Chauncey. And so I just hate this back and forth. And Will, you mentioned, you know, can the Blazers be a good enough franchise to take advantage of all these draft picks and all the acquisitions that they're getting in, you know, future talent or things to stock up on to help their franchise in the coming years? Like, I'm not sold that this franchise can handle that. They hired a general manager.
That's fair. That's fair.
They hired a general manager without any interview process. They just did it because he was already in the organization. Neil Olshey essentially brought Chauncey Billups on as his coach because he was his buddy. I mean, how long was he a coach for in Los Angeles as an assistant? Like 4 to 6 months? It wasn't long. It was a nepotism hire. And it's just another decision that the Portland Trail Blazers have made in the past few seasons, trading Dame away included, after he said, okay, you know what, this isn't going to work going to Miami. I do want to stay here. And the whole reason that he wanted to trade in the first place was because the Blazers said that they were going to draft a talent to help him. Then they ended up drafting his replacement in Scoot Henderson. So you can't be mad at Dame for that. You just can't. You have to have animus towards this organization here. It's a joke. And seeing games like this, yes, I want them to lose. But after a couple of games over the weekend where they win, you just wonder what the hell this organization is doing. And I'll end this saying once again that, Paul Allen rolling around in his grave right now watching this franchise handle business.
Just look at who they beat, though. They beat the Utah Jazz, and they beat the Dallas Mavericks.
Without Luka.
Without Luka. It's not like they went through and they beat Boston, and then they beat Denver, right? You won a game that you were supposed to win, and you won a game that it became a game you were supposed to win because of the players who are missing. Right now, when you look at this Blazer team early on in the season, most of the experts of what they expected out of the Blazers, this is about the win total that they expected, right? You might actually be a win or two ahead of schedule.
What was it, 23.5, I think,
right.
Was the Vegas line.
Right, and they're,
They're 11, yeah.
Yeah, so you probably have one or two wins that you weren't expecting on there already. There's moments of really good highs. There's also lots of really bad lows. This is just one of those really bad lows, and it's part of the tanking. And you have to hope and trust that whoever the organization decides to take will turn into something. And if they won't, then you move on from them and you find someone new. The Blazers got lucky in the past. There was a long tank between the good Jail Blazers to the bad Jail Blazers until you found Brandon Roy and LaMarcus Aldridge. And then you were about ready to have to tank again, and you got extremely lucky in that you hit in Damian Lillard and you hit so fast, right? How many teams have tried to make that move where, that next draft star. I drafted the next player. He's supposed to be a big-time performer. He's supposed to be a star. And then that guy doesn't turn into anything. Markelle Fultz was supposed to be a game-changer.
Yeah.
Ben Simmons was supposed to be a franchise.
Can't even shoot.
Like, he was going to be a franchise cornerstone.
Yeah.
They compared him to LeBron.
Yes, they
did. That's a real thing that people did.
Oh, you're right.
Anthony Bennett was a number one overall draft pick. They called Andrew Wiggins Maple Jordan. So there are times where even the experts get it wrong. It's going to take time. Get ready to the tank.
All right, let's shift from the negative to the positive at this point. The Blazers take the loss to the Sixers. They will hit the road to face off against the Lakers down in Los Angeles on Thursday. But let's get to some fun stuff. The college football playoff getting going tonight. And, of course, the Rose Bowl is finally upon us. Let's dive into Oregon's matchup with Ohio State in the college football playoff quarterfinals. That's coming up next. But first, here's Will with SportsCenter.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080 The Fan.
Well, the eve of the Rose Bowl is officially upon us. The quarterfinals of the college football playoff getting going tonight. And actually, you can hear that action starting over on 910 ESPN at 4 o'clock. It's Penn State taking on Boise State, a 4:30 kick on ESPN in the Verbo Fiesta Bowl down in Glendale, Arizona. But of course, the game that everybody listening, I would assume, at least here in the Portland metro area and all over the world listening on the Odyssey app and on YouTube as well, cares about would be the Ohio State Buckeyes matchup with the Oregon Ducks, undefeated, number one in the country, taking on the Buckeyes again in a rematch for this season in the Rose Bowl. What a crazy road it was for Oregon to get here, and an even crazier road for Ohio State, having to play in the first round of the college football playoff, not able to get into the Big Ten championship game, and allowing Penn State to after that loss. Well, Ohio State's still back here facing Oregon, in control of their own destiny once again. It's a little bit different of an Ohio State team, though, Will. We can talk about the differences between these teams, you know, back and forth. Who's there as compared to before? We'll get into, like, Jordan Birch being on, you know, Oregon's defensive line back there, as opposed to the center and, I believe, left tackle for Ohio State being out. So there's a couple of big additions and subtractions that these teams got to talk about, but we know that these are two of the best teams in the country. Ohio State favored by 2.5 at this point. That line has not moved, and Oregon, Ohio State's total is 55.5 points. So at least just looking at the numbers, I would say Vegas assumes that it's going to be a pretty big score on both sides of the ball. It's going to be a close game, but they think Ohio State's going to get the win at least right out, or at least outright.
I'll tell you right now.
The win from the start of trying to make these odds.
I'll tell you right now, I think that it's going to be so high scoring.
Really?
Have you gone back and watched the original game?
Yeah.
There are so many points left on the board,
yes,
and they still put up 63, and that's from both teams.
Well, I mean, right? how many field goals did Oregon have to kick instead of scoring touchdowns? It was, well, I believe, two or three,
It was two, and then they still left, like, they left points on the board in those spots because one of their field goals, I think Sappington ended up kicking, like, a 40-yarder, but remember, the one, they got stopped on, like, the 5-yard line of Ohio State. There was only one touchdown scored in the entire third quarter. There is so much meat left on the bone, but it's on both sides. Ohio State, if you get a third down and you keep a drive marching instead of having to punt the ball back to Oregon, there's points on that drive.
Yeah.
Right? If Will Howard slides 2 seconds earlier, there's points on that drive. If Jeremiah Smith doesn't push off, there's points on that drive. And I know that's the same drive as Will Howard waiting too long to slide, but what I'm saying is there were missed opportunities by both teams to get points here. So I love the over in this game. I love the shootout feel that it's going to have.
Okay.
I still think, and this is where it gets kind of weird, of like, defense wins championships. But the difference is back in the day, right? And Anthony Newman talks about this all the time. Back in the day, a key stat for a defense was how many yards you gave up. And if you didn't give up many yards, that usually meant you didn't give up many points. But nowadays, with the passing offenses and how prolific they are, I don't care how many yards you give up. I remember Oregon last year when they took on Washington State. Cam Ward threw for 400 yards in that game. If you just looked at the stat line, you'd go, wow, Washington State. And I said, I'm not going to show you the score. Cam Ward, 400 yards. Bo Nix had like two.
I would say that Washington State beats Oregon by
upset.
A lot. Yeah.
Oregon blew them out of the water. They blew them out of the water. So the key in this one is going to be which defense gets the key critical stop.
Okay.
Which defense is able to get that turnover and actually get it to go their way, unlike in the last game where Bosa gets the interception, yet they still say it's a completed pass to the tight end, right?
Yeah. Why? One of the plays that could have gone the other way or should have. Yeah.
100%. I trust Oregon's defense to get the stop more than I trust Ohio State's defense to get the stop. And it's because of the matchup on the D-line versus the O-line. Oregon's D-line versus Ohio State's O-line. Oregon is going to be better than when they played Ohio State the first time. Ohio State's offensive line, best case scenario, is the same. That's the best. If this offensive line, which they haven't shown this, can run the way that first original group offensive line came out and was running, they were running at like 4 yards a clip. They were really cruising. If they can do that, best case scenario, it's the same O-line as who Oregon took on the first time. But now it's a stronger defensive line for Oregon because they get Birch back.
Quickly to respond to your first point about limiting big plays, Ohio State's actually one of the better teams in the country at doing that. I do believe they're first overall in red zone scoring percentage. They just don't allow a lot of scores down there. And they're also really good at limiting those big plays. They're fourth in FBS in explosive play rate allowed. And you see in that last matchup between Oregon and Ohio State, a lot of that success for Oregon, you just mentioned it, Will, it came in the first half. They put up 22 points, 285 yards. They moved the ball so well because Dylan Gabriel had time in the pocket. He was able, I don't think he was sacked that game at all.
He was not.
Ohio State did get to pressure him a little bit. They had, looking at the numbers per True Media, 36.1%. pressure rate, though, as we just said, no sacks there. And it was one of the only two games this season where Ohio State didn't record a sack. So you talk about the differences between these two teams. So Oregon's offense is really good. We know about all their wide receivers and their tight ends, and we know about their 200 running back attack in Noah Whittington and Jordan James. We're actually going to get into a positional breakdown between the two teams coming up here in just a few minutes. But, you know, talking about like Dylan Gabriel trying to make big plays against a team that is really good at limiting big plays, Will, I do see a possibility where this game does become a shootout, but to do so, I do believe Oregon's going to need to be much more successful at the run in this game than they were in the first game, Ohio State. What say you?
Well, they were successful. They just did it in a different way.
That's true.
Like, if I was looking at betting props, I believe Dylan Gabriel is 18 and a half rushing yards. I'd slam the over. Will Howard's like 12 and a half rushing yards. I'd slam the over. I would expect both of these quarterbacks to add into the plus one run game. And that's where you're going to see them try and put the defensive ends of both teams, who are both extremely talented. Jordan Birch and Mateo Uyunglele on Oregon's side. And then Jack Sawyer and JT Tumalau. And I butchered that name.
It's okay.
And it's
just call him JT.
It's going to be fine. Both teams have two of the more elite defensive ends in the country. So how do you attack them? Well, you make them choose. And then when you make them choose, you make them choose wrong. It's the beauty of the zone read game. Mm-hmm. Hey, put JT in a spot. Put Sawyer in a spot where he has to choose the running back or the quarterback. And then have an option behind, right? Coach Stein has shown a lot in his time at Oregon that he has everything has an extra option. And he's going to dictate what he wants to do against or against the defense. The difference between Dillingham and Stein is Stein wants to dictate, Dillingham wants to counterpunch. You're going to bring a blitz? Well, I have this blitz beater here. You're going to sit back in a zone? I'm going to have this option here. Stein is going to say, hey, that's fine. Your defense is set up in that way. I have a better option out here, and I'm going to take that option. Your defense is set up to stop the run. We're going to beat you with the pass. Or we're going to outnumber you at the point of attack and still beat you with the run, even though you're set up for that. Dylan Gabriel in big games this year, when you've needed him most, that's when he's added in his legs. Mm-hmm. I would expect Dylan Gabriel to run around a little bit more in this game. If Oregon is going to win and do what they need to do offensively, the O-line has to show up. The beauty is this O-line, aside from your two games against teams from Idaho, has shown up. You made the switch at center week two. This offensive line was the third or second best offensive line in the country this year.
Yeah.
They only lost to Army when it came to the Joe Moore Award. So I like Oregon's ability in this game to run on Ohio State. But don't expect it to be Jordan James got 20 carries and ran for 85 yards, and Whittington got 8 or 9 and he ran for 30, right? That kind of is what they were doing in the back half of the season. They were just pounding those two running backs. Don't be shocked if Jordan James has 40 to 50, Whittington has 20 to 30, and then Dylan Gabriel is in there with another 30 to 40. Expect Dylan Gabriel to add in his legs in this game.
Yeah, I see that happening. I do also see with the way Noah Whittington has kind of grown into, you know, being that power back for Oregon and kind of giving them that second option in the second half of the season that you were just talking about. Well, we're rushing for a lot more. You look at the first game when he only touched the ball 3 times in the backfield. That's kind of what I'm saying. Like, more of a rushing attack, more successful of a duo, you know, between Jordan James and Noah Whittington, because Dylan Gabriel, he's going to be out running. I'm assuming that they're going to need a man to spy on him. I would hope Will Stein has already drawn stuff up to force that on Ohio State, but I think that they can be successful getting Jordan James and Noah Whittington involved together. I wouldn't mind a lot of 2 running back backfield sets. I think that's something that you could probably screw with Ohio State a little bit on. All right, we got to get out to break. Let's continue to preview this matchup in the Rose Bowl between Oregon and Ohio State. We've got some comments from Dan Lanning to get to, see what he had to say about the team at Rose Bowl Media Day yesterday. We'll also go position by position to see which team has the advantage in the Rose Bowl. It's 12:50 on The Fan.
Danny and Dusty on The Fan.
Happy New Year, everybody. The final day of 2024 and the final segment of hour number one of a Schulte and Will edition of Danny and Dusty here on Sports Radio 1080 The Fan, talking all things Oregon v. Ohio State. And Oregon head coach Dan Lanning was actually at Rose Bowl Media Day yesterday. I did not know this until this morning. Apparently, they're making these players and coaches do a media day for every single game. So if you were in the first round here like Ohio State, you had to do a media day 3 days leading up to it. And then here for the Rose Bowl, you got to do 3 days of media leading up to it. And then apparently the winner of this going to the Cotton Bowl is going to have to do that again. And then obviously going again to the national championship. So we're hearing from these players and these coaches a lot. But I really do like to hear from Dan Lanning because he does offer some pretty sick insight to how he's preparing his team. First, I wanted to start with his comments about Dylan Gabriel and how confident he feels with such an experienced quarterback under center.
Dylan's obviously an unbelievable player. I think he's a really hard player to defend because of the things that he can do, the decisions that he makes, you know, the moments that he shows up in, pressure moments. I think that's where he shines the most, which is really important at that position, his poise and confidence in those moments, and then his trust in the guys around him.
Yeah, the growth that we've seen from Dylan Gabriel this year, Will, I guess that's definitely something to talk about as far as like how this team looked, from the beginning of the season looking to now. And one of those huge pieces of growth was quarterback Dylan Gabriel. A couple of very shaky performances to start the season off, at least not necessarily some of the best like decision making that you could see near the end zone at one point through an early season pick, a couple of times getting sacked too early. Like, the stats look okay, but he wasn't really making all the correct decisions that you thought he could, holding on to the ball a little bit too long. And you wonder, somebody with so much experience, like, why the hell are they doing that? Well, thankfully, seems to just be some early season jitters, because he has come in, not only owned this offense, Will, but I believe that he has the support of everybody on this team. You heard Tez Johnson, you know, talking about how he was confident at different points in the season, how kickers were going to get the game-winning field goal. Didn't matter to him because he's got that faith in his guys. It sounds like Dan Lanning and everybody on the Ducks roster is behind Dylan Gabriel, and what a talent to be behind. It's certainly not Bo Nix, but, man, he can run the ball, and I'm not sure that it's much different as far as like the offensive plays that you could call from what the Bo Nix gave the Ducks last year.
Dylan Gabriel is the best quarterback in the college football playoff. He's not the best quarterback in college football, and he's not the best pro prospect.
No.
But when it comes to the college football playoff, right now, with what he did this whole season, when you look at it in its entirety, he's easily the best. He's the most efficient. When he needs to have a long ball, look, he doesn't have the strongest arm, but he's got a little bit of that Russell Wilson moon ball,
yeah,
where he throws it up and lets his wide receivers go and get it. He trusts Tez Johnson explicitly. He always finds ways to get him the football. He knows when to be smart with the football and run. early on in the season, I had issues with some of his red zone turnovers. It's almost like he was using those to test his arm strength or to test, hey, that's a tight window. Can I fit that ball in that tight window? I'm going to try this against UCLA. I'm going to try this against Michigan State because we're going to win this football game. It doesn't matter how well I perform. We can roll out there and win that game. But we can't roll out there and beat Ohio State. So I'm going to see if I can fit this ball into this tight window. Oh, I can't fit that ball. Or I can fit that ball. And then he makes the adjustments accordingly. Dylan Gabriel is why they're at where they're at right now. And his ability in the biggest moments to be the best player on the field, that's why Oregon is undefeated. That's why Oregon is the number one seed. And frankly, I think that's why a lot of people are picking Oregon to win this game against Ohio State and go all the way.
And Dylan Gabriel is the reason that Ohio State actually has given up touchdown passes this year. I believe they haven't given up any touchdown passes since they played Oregon, and I don't think they had leading up to that. They also had only given up, I believe it was 3 40-plus yard passes all season. Well, Dylan Gabriel and the Ducks have two of those with a 48-yard tutty and a 69-yard pass that set up another touchdown. I believe that was to Evan Stewart,
was to Evan Stewart.
Exactly. So really, really good things to lean on for Oregon. Yes, Ohio State is very good, but Oregon is, in my opinion, better. And we're going to talk to somebody else about that. Down in Pasadena is our own Dusty Hera, the normal host of this show, to give us a bit of a deeper preview into the Rose Bowl matchup between Oregon and Ohio State, give his predictions, and of course, we'll get a vibe check. I always love to see how the players are doing down at the stadium, down at the field, as they get ready to match up with each other in the very, very closely seeded Rose Bowl, closely betted Rose Bowl. 2.5 points, just those 2.5 separating Oregon and Ohio State. It's going to be a toss-up. So we'll get to Dusty Hera coming up on the other side and a Will update here on Sports Radio 1080 The Fan.